If you've been worried about the economy, that it's an election year, that the price of goods are increasing, if you've had any stress around that, or if you just want to make some more money, then this is an episode for you. My guest, Paul Erickson with Management One, is breaking all of it down. You're going to get so much out of this episode as far as where to focus energy. When it comes to these headlines that we're reading, what does it mean for your store? What do you need to do to prepare? Where do you need to focus? And how do you really thrive and stay in business and really still continue to grow your store? You're going to hear it all. Paul is one of my favorite people in the industry. He is so fun and funny and has great stories. He's deep in retail, very rooted in retail, and has helped so many retailers build very profitable, successful stores, and you get to hear from him today. So it's such an honor to have him on the show. Before we dive in, here's a little bit more about my guest. As director of mentoring, Paul brings extensive experience serving retail clients throughout the United States, Canada, Latin America, and the Caribbean. His passion for client service and for preparing independent retailers to excel in the area of inventory productivity and control has been central to both his personal success and that of the Management One client base. Widely recognized and in demand for his talents as a retail educator, Paul has conducted entertaining and information-packed seminars and workshops for such groups as National Shoe Retailers Association, Outdoor Retailer, Independent College Bookstore Association, MAGIC, National Sporting Goods Association, Ontario Fashion Exhibitors in Toronto, and the Global Retail Conference in Barcelona, Spain, just to name a few. He has been featured in Fortune magazine, Women's Wear Daily, and on the CBS Evening News, and now on Rooted in Retail. And something that Paul and I talk about in this episode is a pricing psychology webinar that he does for retailers to really help you understand the psychology behind pricing your products. And we're going to do a webinar just for our Rooted in Retailer listeners and our Crystal Media retailers. So be on the lookout. We'll post that invite in our Rooted in Retail Facebook group. So be sure you're part of that group so you don't miss this webinar. It's going to happen in May. I can't wait for it. And now let's dive into this epic interview with Paul. Welcome to Rooted in Retail. I'm your host, Crystal Vilkaitis. Here, we have engaging and informative conversations with successful indie retailers and industry experts. Together, we learn, connect, and grow. Don't miss our live after the show every Tuesday night in the Rooted in Retail Facebook group. All right, here's today's episode. Paul, welcome to Rooted in Retail. I'm thrilled you're here.
Hi, Crystal. It's great to be with you.
Yes, we're going to talk about something very important, a hot topic today, which I'm really excited to get into. But before we do, you're super rooted in retail. Will you take a couple minutes and share more about you and your retail experience?
Sure. My name is Paul Erickson. I am director of mentorship. It's somewhat of an unusual title at Management One. You get titles like that, Crystal, when you get old, like I do, and they kick you upstairs. I'm sort of the utility infielder for the company. I used to be director of sales, but we've got someone younger, smarter, better looking than me and Dane Cohen who's doing that. And I am really in charge at Management One of education, of teaching not only our clients, but our new affiliates, our new retail experts about financial merchandising, which is such an incredibly important topic, particularly today. I've been in retail my whole life. I've been in consulting for the last 40 years. I've given seminars around the world, literally, in just about every corner of the globe on this subject to independent retailers in Asia, South America, Europe, and North America.
Beautiful. Yeah. Dane recommended you. I said, Dane, we're looking for somebody who has amazing experience around retail and finance to talk about what's going on in the world right now. Because as I said to you in my email, Dane's like, you got to talk to Paul. He can so speak to this. We did a survey recently at Crystal Media and it was great response. We had a lot of people filling it out, which was so great to get. But when I asked the question, what concerns or worries do you have? Overwhelmingly, our retailers were talking about the economy, election year, and the cost of goods increasing. And I just want to read some of these because I bet our retailers can relate. Some of our listeners can still relate to this. So economy and election year causing a decline in sales that are out of our control. Economy, hard to figure out. Ever-changing economy, the state of economy, macroeconomics factors, weathering an economic downturn, what the year holds, different economy and election year. Election year will impact us. Election year worries. Cost of supplies has gone up. Turning a decent profit with cost of goods increasing so rapidly, tighter margins, escalating costs, less disposable income, customers hesitant to buy. So, Paul, let's get into it. What would you say to the retailer? Let's start with the economy that's worried about the economy. What advice do you have?
Wow. Well, after hearing that, that lit me of worries. Let's all go and commit suicide right now.
Yeah.
I think people listen to the media too often. The reality is that the economy is strong, very, very strong. The prediction of a recession by the Fed has never come through, despite the fact that the Fed tried to put us into a recession to control inflation. Inflation is now down. It's look, we went through a inflationary period, so the prices haven't come down. But in some sectors, we're in a deflationary period. Gasoline, for example, is just one of them that I could name right now. But there's still issues with grocery prices and things like that. In terms of the election year, this is a canard that goes on every 4 years. And let me just share with you some facts. Since 1960, and Crystal, can you tell me who was elected president in 1960?
Oh my God, don't ask me these things, Paul. I'm really bad, really bad with presidents.
You did not know there was going to be a test today, did you?
I did not. I'm not prepared.
John Kennedy, since John Kennedy was elected president in 1960, there have been 16 election years since then. Of those 16 years, only three was the stock market gone down. That means 13 of the 16 past election years, the actual economy has risen. We've seen growth in the economy and the stock market has been strong. This is somewhat of a fable that people think because in this election year, listen, a lot of people get nervous. And particularly if you're rooted in one of the two parties, you know, it becomes a very emotional thing, but most people aren't. And there is more money available now. The economy is strong and they're outspending it.
I love hearing that. This is great news. And it's what I love is that you're looking at the data. You're looking at the facts here, and that's what we need to hear, because I think you're right. We do get really caught up in media, in what our friends are talking about, our family is talking about. And certainly you might be feeling some of those restrictions, but we'll talk about some of that and some advice here. What about the cost of goods increasing?
Well, I think you're talking about you're not talking about an accounting term here. You're talking about actually the price of merchandise. Is that right?
Yep.
Merchandise, like everything else, has gone up. There's no question about it. But so have incomes. I think we have to be careful of what we're buying. But it has so far. We have over 1,000 clients at Management One, and we have not seen this to be a factor at all in terms of their results over the last year and a half. Sales are still strong. Our client base was up over 7% last year during an inflationary period of time. We have to be careful about raising prices, but generally speaking, we shouldn't be afraid to raise prices. And there are all kinds of tricks of the trade in retail, Crystal, that you can raise prices without your customers knowing it. In fact, I even do a seminar, once someone wants to contact me, I would do a private webinar for any retailer interested in exactly how to use psychology to raise prices on your current merchandise without the customer ever knowing about it or feeling it or affecting sales in any way. So there's lots of ways that we can increase our margins and increase our prices without negative effects.
That's awesome. I think I'll talk to you about doing a webinar, because I think our Crystal Media Rooted in Retail, we would love to hear more about that. And
let's
that was a big question. Yeah, okay, we'll do it. Awesome. And we'll announce it here on the show. Everybody, you're invited. You know, that was a question I have, because I come from such the marketing social media space when it comes to retail. So the whole like pricing aspect and cost of goods and all of that is completely out of my world. So this might be super basic, but that was, as I'm reading all these survey results and I'm hearing the news of cost of goods increasing, That was my first thought, is just increase your prices. But there is a mythology to that, and there are certain ways that we want to be doing it. Can you give us one tip for retailers who are considering increasing their prices?
I think we have to understand that the consumer really doesn't know what something should cost anyway. And so based on that fact, sometimes it's always a good idea to tell retailers, message them in your signage. And this is so important that I think independent retailers don't do a good enough job from making sure that they know if something just came into your store, just put a sign up, just arrived. If you've got items that are hot sellers, make sure that you message that with pick of the week on this merchandise. And if you're a boutique, let's just take, if you're a boutique and you had to raise, you have a basic t-shirt that you carry, and let's say you've been selling it for $26. And because of inflation, you have to increase the price to $29. Well, a couple of things. Number one, to the consumer's eyes, there's absolutely zero difference in price between $26 and $29 on that t-shirt. So you probably should have been pricing it at $29 all along. Number two, when you put it out, make sure you tell them that our everyday low price, $29. Don't just put $29 on there, because one of the most beautiful things about retail is that the consumer tends to believe anything we tell them. This is what I love about retail. So if you just start signaling, this is a low price. Let me give you one example of that. This was about 10 years ago, and they did a study on inline skates, and they had the same skate, and it was the same price. And in one ad, they called the benefit of the inline skate was high performance. And another ad, same skate, same price, the benefit was low friction. And when people asked about what was the better price of the two skates, which were the same price, 80% of the respondents say that the skate that was described as low friction was the better price, when low friction had nothing to do with the price. It only was the word low. This is a powerful thing that retailers do not understand, that they can control. You tell the customer it's a good price no matter what it is. Our everyday low price on t-shirts is $199. I'm being facetious right now. But whatever it is, you tell them what the price is, and they tend to believe you. And I would love to do an entire webinar with your team, Crystal, on this, because it's so important today.
Yeah, we will. And I feel like this, I love that we're talking about this, Paul, because I've seen retailers like in their social posts, and I've heard from them too. They'll be like, they're leading with, we're sorry, we have to raise our prices. Yeah. And, you know, like, we're just trying to keep up. We have to raise our prices, you know, and sometimes there can be almost like a victim mentality, and in like, well, this is happening to us, so we have to do it to you too. And, you know, if anyone is taking that approach, I have a feeling that's not, there's a better way. There's a better way of doing it.
You're literally admitting that you're overpricing it. I mean, so when I say they believe what you tell them, they're going to believe, oh my God, the prices must be really high right now. That would be the absolute worst thing you could do at this point.
Exactly. Okay. Awesome. So, Paul, then what economic indicators should independent retailers watch, and how can these guide them through an uncertain economy?
Well, the most important economic indicators an independent retailer should watch are their own internal economic indicators. You have to remember, this is getting back again to the economy as a whole. I've been doing this a long time, and there's been only three instances in the last 25 years where something, a macroeconomic event, has actually affected independent retailers. And that was 9/11. That was the recession of 2008, which was a deep recession. We were a week away from not having money in ATMs around the country. And finally, of course, the pandemic. Other than that, the ups and downs of the economy have nothing to do with independent retailing. Think of it this way, Crystal. The economy, think of the economy in the United States as being a big lake. And what each individual retailer is doing is taking a straw out and taking their little bit of that economy out of this. I live in the Midwest, so Lake Superior. So think of Lake Superior and think of someone with a straw sucking some of that water, that money out of Lake Superior. And you can see that whether this Lake Superior water is down a foot or up a foot has no impact whatsoever on the typical independent retailer. In fact, what many independent retailers do is they cause harm by doing things from a negative perspective. What I'm saying is they may cut back on inventory. they may not take markdowns as fast as they should because they're worried about profitability. There's all kinds of self-harming behavior independent retailers do that they're not aware of. What are their internal indicators? One of the weird things about retail, in other businesses, we don't have this because we have this unfortunate necessity of having to carry inventory in retail. And one of the weird things about retail is that you can show a profit in your store and not have any money. I remember years and years ago, and I was a young man. In fact, this is how long ago it was, Crystal, when I was working with a client here in Minneapolis, and the son was taking over the business from his dad. And he decided to hire me as their consultant. And the dad came in on the first meeting. We were in their conference room, and a nice guy, getting ready to retire, happy that his son's taking over. And he goes, "Young man, I'm glad you're working with my son because the business," now this is in 1983, "the business is, retail is tough. It's really tough. It was easy when I owned," this was 40 years ago. None of these concerns that you're telling me are new, right? This has been with us all the time. He goes, I remember business was so good that we made so much money in this retail business that I literally had to go to the bank and borrow money to pay the taxes on all the money we were making." And I was a young guy back then, and I remember hearing that going, "Huh, that's a little weird. Why would you have, if you're making money, why do you have to go take a loan out to pay the tax on the money you're making?" And that is the crux of the problem that can be in retail, which is, if you're not watching your inventory and not understanding how your profits are being calculated from an accounting perspective, you could get into a situation where you are showing a much fatter profit at your bottom line, which you'll have to pay a tax on, than what your bank account has in terms of cash on hand. If anybody is listening to this podcast right now and has that happen to them, I would hope they would get a hold of me and I can share with them exactly why. And it has to do with beginning and ending inventories. And so ultimately, and I'm going to get to your point in just a second here, ultimately, and the reason why I say this, it is not profit that is the number one indicator for a retail store. It is your cash flow. You can run a retail business, Crystal, for months at a time and not show a profit. And a lot of retailers do. But you can't run your store. You can't even open your store a day if you don't have any. Cash flow is the ultimate economic indicator. And there is a thing called cash margin, which is the difference between what you paid for the merchandise and what you sold it for. That is a really, really important financial indicator for your business. The second one, I would say, is look at your inventory, compare it to how much sales it produces. I'll tell you another quick story, too. How long is our interview?
This is so good. I mean, just keep going, Paul. Give us another story.
I'll tell you another quick story, and I love this story because when I was with a company in Los Angeles, and we had an independent retailer. He had 16 stores in Australia. And we were all excited. We can go to Australia. Maybe we get this guy as a client. So, you know, we asked him to send us his financials, and he sent, and I think it was like a book that he sent, because he had 16 stores, and at every store, every category, sub-department, everything, SKU, he had them all in every individual store. Boy, did he have data, right?
Wow, yeah.
And then he had, in every one of those lines, he said what his growth profit was as a percentage. So it would, you go from page to page. I can just almost do a visual. Page to page. And every page, the gross margin was 45%, something 46%, something 47%, some 44%, 48%, all within 2 or 3 percentage points. And then he wanted us to know what his problem. He said, "What is my problem?" And I remember we got on a call with him and we said, "We have no idea because you haven't told us about the inventory you're carrying. You're only telling us about the margin you're getting on what you sell. You're not giving us how much you bought and how much you carry." You see, and one more story too. I had a client in Baltimore, Maryland years ago. It was a chain of shoe stores, and they were bought out by, their parent company was H.H. Brown in New England. And H.H. Brown was bought by Berkshire Hathaway, which is Warren Buffett. And so I called the president of the shoe chain, which was part of H.H. Brown. And I said, "Mr. Funny Guy," I said, "have you met Warren Buffett yet? You had lunch with him at Omaha." And he said, actually, he said, I had a team from Omaha here last week in Baltimore, and they saw my bonus plan that I had for my employees, and they ripped it up in front of me. Literally, I told them, are you saying metaphorically they ripped it up in front of me? And it was Terry. And I go, no, they actually ripped it up. And they go, Mr. Buffett does not pay, we do not bonus our people at Berkshire Hathaway this way. And so I'm thinking, what is this stupid way that he was bonusing his people?
Yeah.
And so he showed it to me. And eventually, the bonus plan was that he was giving a percentage of the increase in net profitability dollars. So if a buyer in her area increased a net profit dollars by $100,000, and I think it was like 10% or something, it doesn't matter, she would get a bonus check for $10,000. Now, I didn't really, at that point, since I was younger, I thought, seems like a pretty good plan, right? I mean, why wouldn't you reward your people for increasing the amount of profit dollars that you have?
Right.
But what I discovered and what they told him is that because Warren Buffett is an investor, you're leaving a whole big part out of this, which is the amount of inventory that's sitting in the store. And they said, under that plan, you could increase in your area $100,000 net profit, but you could have bought $50 or $80 million worth of merchandise that is still sitting there in boxes you haven't sold yet, but the profit on paper would still be there. And so he said, we're going to have this thing called GMROI, Growth Margin Return on Investment, which is, you know, part of financial merchandising, which can be really boring, but is really, really important. And he said, we're going to bonus our people based on the improvement in return on investment. If we get an improvement in profit, great, but we have to make sure the inventory is not so out of line that eats up that profit in terms of cash flow. The point I'm making is that independent retailers need to take a hard look at the relationship between their inventory and their sales, not just for their own company, but for each individual classifications. That guy from Australia, I had no idea in some stores whether he had a 6-month supply of inventory, 18-month supply of inventory, or maybe only a 6-week supply of inventory, which means he could be missing business because he never included the most essential part. When you are looking at a clear indicator of your store, you can look at margin, that's fine, but look at how much inventory you had and consider this. Retail is a business that takes into consideration time more than margin. Time is absolutely everything. And the longer merchandise sits on your floor and hasn't sold and you ignore it, that becomes a cancer in your business that metastasizes itself throughout your entire business. It metastasizes itself because you've spent cash to buy it and you still haven't had any cash to get it back. The longer it sits, it's like real estate, the more likely you're going to have to mark it down. And number three is the customer sees the same inventory over and over again and come in less time. If you want to increase customer visitation, then the secret to that is not necessarily your website or your social media. Fine. But the real secret to that is increase your turnover. Because if you can increase your turnover by 20 or 30%, which means that you have a fresher inventory and more new goods, which is what sells on the floor,
yeah,
that's going to increase your sales a lot faster than anything else. That's really the secret. The reason why Zara is as successful as it is, the most successful retail boutique chain in the history of the world, is because nothing stays on that floor for more than 6 weeks. After 6 weeks, they have decided, the customer has made the decision, they don't want it. I don't know what they do with it. They donate it. They burn it. I don't really care. During the 6 weeks, it's always being moved around every week. The windows are changed every week. The merchandise is always changing every week. But every 6 weeks, there's a new store. And that's why the average Zara customer shops Zara 14 times a year. Mm-hmm. And the average customer of a boutique here in the United States shops you about 4 or 5 times a year. Of your good customer, I should say, not even your average.
Wow.
That's the secret. That is your key economic indicator in retail. Your cash flow, and that is directly proportional to how much of your capital is tied up in inventory to what is selling.
Beautiful. Okay, I just learned so much, Paul. A couple follow-up questions on that, and maybe this depends on store, but how many weeks or months of inventory should they be carrying at one time?
Well, it depends on the type of store you have and the access to inventory. So let's just speak to fashion first. And fashion footwear and fashion apparel are going to be different. And fashion, fast fashion apparel and contemporary is going to be somewhat different too. But they're not going to be dramatically different. The access to inventory is the key thing. I talk to retailers who are sitting with a retailer that does $1 million in sales and has a $500,000 retail inventory. And I ask him, so he has a 6-month supply. And I ask him, what's the lead time for you to get merchandise? He goes, oh, I can usually get merchandise in a month, sometimes 2 weeks. So at the most, I buy out 2 or 3 months. And I said, then why on earth do you carry 6 months worth of inventory?
Yeah.
And by the way, that 6-month inventory, that's not everything in a store 6 months. Some things just came in last week. Some things have been there for 2 years, which he's paid double taxation for every time he counts it, by the way. And so what was your question again? I'm sorry.
Just how long? How many weeks?
It depends on the vertical. If you, let's take a worst case vertical. You're a high end jewelry store or you buy nothing but European. And that's it. And so you're always buying 6 months out. It takes 6 months to get merchandise into your store. And that may be the slowest turn vertical I could think of at this point in time. And that would be 2 turns or a 6 month supply. So if your store does $1 million, you'd average 500,000 retail based on your margin. Let's say it's 50%. You'd average $250,000. That's a very slow turn, but that would be probably the slowest turn. Fast fashion should be 6 turns. Every 2 months, you should have a new inventory. And now how do you calculate that? Is take your sales last year and divide it by the amount of turn you think is right. If you do $1 million in sales and you want, and you say, I'm a seasonal business. There's 4 seasons in a year, spring, summer, fall, winter. So I probably should replace my inventory 4 times. Then whatever your sales are, let's just use $1 million. That's easy to calculate. Then if I want 4 turns, then I want to average 250,000 at retail, sell that 4 times. And based on your margin, you can figure your cost price from that. That's where you should be on the average. That's a benchmark. And everybody that's listening to this podcast, can use that. Now, I will say this, Crystal. There's a new breed of retailer out there that is risk averse. And we're talking to them at management one all the time. And they're so worried about getting into debt. And they're so worried. We don't like debt either, by the way, but we all have debt. If we have a mortgage, we have debt, right? That's right. Only a problem if you can't pay it.
Right.
But they're also averse to debt that they end up handicapping themselves by keeping the inventory too light. I just talked to a retailer this morning. She's doing about $400,000 a year. And I asked her inventory, and it's $25,000 at cost or $50,000 at retail. I don't even know how she does $400,000 a year with that small of inventory. But she is handicapping herself because, and I said, does it seem like you're always running out? Does it seem like customers are coming in and you never really can sell them? Because you just sold that piece they would have bought last week. You're underperforming because you're underbuying and understocking your store. So that's another aspect of this. It's right. Like the Goldilocks formula. The porridge is either too hot or too cold and just right. If it's too hot, you've got way too much inventory you don't need. But if it's too cold, you know what? If you started to buy more and you started to have a better assortment and a deeper assortment, there's a very high degree of probability that you can increase your sales. And I'm talking dramatically. We're having our annual meeting in San Diego in June. And I think you're going to be there too.
I'll be there.
If I'm not mistaken. We have I'm not going to say the name of the store, but it's been a client for a long time. And she came to us and she's in a town of 50,000 people. It is a resort town. She's in a town of 50,000 people and she opened up a gift shop. She bought the gift shop. It was doing $400,000. She bought the gift shop in, I think, in around 2013, something like that. $400,000. She just broke $10 million this year.
Whoa.
She's going to be speaking to our group, by the way.
Oh, cool.
The other thing independent retailers do not appreciate is the ceiling. Mm. They have a high ceiling. Even if you're in a small town, you can do a lot of business if you do it right. Don't worry about the economy. Don't worry about other things you can't control. There's one thing you can control as a retailer, and that's how well you do business. And how you have an emotional attachment to your customer and how you work with your customer. People, given the choice, would rather buy from an independent local retailer than a chain any day of the week, all things being equal.
Yep.
But if they can't find your size, or you can't, or if half your inventory is over 6 months old, so it's like a trip down memory lane every time you walk into the store, you're not going to maximize your business. But if you're smart and you know what you're doing and you understand people and you have that retail DNA in your marrow, if you have that, and every time I talk to somebody, I can tell if they have it right away. If you have that, the sky is the limit in terms of what you can do in retail today.
I love it. See, this is where I'm loving this conversation, because as you can see, we talked for maybe a couple minutes about the economy, election year, cost of goods. It was like, okay, next, what we really need to get into is what we can control in our own businesses. And I think that you mentioned retailers will self-sabotage and cause pain for ourselves. I mean, not just retailers, we're human. Everybody does this in some way. And spending that energy and that effort looking outwards on those things that you're hearing, that you're feeling, that may not be true. Like, we just have to really get down to and look at our business, look at our numbers, look at our inventory, spend that time and energy on everything that you just discussed here. And if anybody is lost, they got to contact you. Paul, how can they contact you?
Paul, P-A-U-L, at management and then a dash. And then one, the word, O-N-E.com. Just send me an email and I will get back to them right away. I want to say one thing, and I'm probably jumping ahead here because I know you're going to ask me about retail books or books with business books. But I think this is a pertinent right now, Crystal, what we're talking about. A book that I think anybody who's listening to this podcast right now, go out and buy. It's called People Buy You. And it's a great book because it's not necessarily a retail book, but it is a retail book, because in retail, what we find is that most things are equal. You have a lot of competitors out there who are essentially carrying very similar merchandise to you. You're not like this unique thing in terms of what you're carrying. So the difference maker, and this is what the book is about in business, the difference maker in many cases is the emotional connection that you can make with your customer. You know, and how you anchor those relationships with your customer. We talk about market share. I call it share of heart. How you can do that, that is a huge difference maker. And that's why I love that book so much. And that's the great advantage that independent retailers have over the chains. And in my webinar, okay, we're going to plug this before you even ask me to do it. But in my webinar on psychological retailing, I'm going to talk about things like that and talk about the concept of free, which is so important. Can I tell you a quick story? Another story. You have to get a hook and get me off of this.
Story time with Paul.
So, you know, many, many years ago, I used to go to this French restaurant. I live in Minneapolis with my then future ex-wife. I know it gets a big laugh, but it's true. So we used to go to this restaurant called Un de Toi in downtown Minneapolis. And Michael was the owner and he was the maitre d'. And we'd go there once a month and we'd always spend a lot. You know, and we spent a lot of money because Michael would make us feel at home. He'd come in and goes, "Oh, Mr. and Mrs. Erickson, that we have your table right by the window, same table, you know, our favorite table." He'd be snapping his fingers and people, they'd come out, get the table ready. We'd sit down, you know, he's helping my wife in the whole thing, super service. And then what's the first thing that happens is that our favorite bottle of wine would show up. Just, he would bring it to the table and we knew that bottle of wine was free. That was on the house. He would always do that on the house.
Wow.
Oh my God. I mean, I look around, nobody else is getting free bottles of wine. I must be special, right?
Yeah.
And that was like amazing to me. We never, and this is in the 80s, we never left that restaurant without spending $150 to $200 in the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, with the appetizers. And of course, we'd have another bottle of wine. And
yep.
$150, $200. And we thought this was the greatest restaurant ever because we got a $10 bottle of wine for free.
Exactly.
And that's what is important to people. It has been said, a little bit of a sneak preview, that, and it's true, when you ask the consumer, would you rather have something for free or a discount? 9 times out of 10, they will say, I prefer something for free. That says a lot about buy three, get the fourth one for free. Or just gifting good customers things when they come in. you have a good customer to come in. If you've got something behind the counter that you can give and something nice. I gave a speech about this in Tokyo years ago, and they got kind of mad at me because a Japanese businessman raised his hand and he said, everybody gets free things. All my customers, it's very common. You don't understand our culture in Japan, Paul. We all get free. And I go, no, I do get your culture. I was just in the Ginza district in Tokyo a few days ago, and I brought my daughter some things from Hello Kitty. Remember Hello Kitty?
Oh, yeah.
And I went to the Hello Kitty, which is a Japanese company, a Hello Kitty store. And I must have spent, oh my God, everything was expensive there too, Crystal. It was unbelievable. I must have spent $300 or $400 there. And yeah, they gave me a Pez container. I'm not talking about a Pez container. It's almost insulting in a way. I'm talking about something of value that you can give. And there's lots of little things that you can create and to anchor those relationships with your customers and get them to shop you more often. You want a 20, 25, 30% increase in sales? Mm-hmm. Don't focus on getting somebody new. I'm not against that. Focus on what you already have and maximize that.
Oh, it's so good. And then I, of course, am thinking of this, like the ripples of that. The consumer is then, of course, going to tell their friends, tell their family. They're posting to social media. If I got a free bottle of wine, I would be going on Instagram, doing a story, being like, you'll never believe what happened today. I'm tagging them. I mean, it goes viral kind of from there. You create these viral sales soldiers for you by really showing up and having excellent service. And I think that's a great way to look at it. And I can't wait for this webinar. You're giving us such great tips. Paul, before we go into the resilience round, I would love to know what future trends should retailers prepare for to ensure long-term success?
One of the most important things an independent retailer needs to do that many are not good at is creating a distinct brand identity. Mm. Developing your brand, I think, is so important. It resonates with the customer. And it gets back again to that independent retailer and the advantages you have over the chains. Because when you start developing your brand, your brand is your stories. Your brand is your values. Your brand is the community connections that you have. And the more you do that, the better off you're going to be in the future. And I think the future... Listen, I do think an online presence is sort of non-negotiable. You have to have that, obviously. There's no question about it. But it's not just having a website and social media accounts. It's the content that goes into that website, the content that goes into those social media accounts. That is where you create your brand. And it gives, you know, you can do all kinds of things with that. Behind the scenes glimpses of your business and your family and customer stories and showcasing your products, but doing it in a creative way and almost creating a lifestyle. If you ever go on Yeti on their website, and that's not just Yeti, there's a million of them, you know, you'd go, what are they selling again? Because they're talking about, you know, going camping in Alaska. You know, it's all about lifestyle, you know, and that's what I'm talking about. And so I do think that as we progress more and more into the digital age, I think that we need to always keep on understand that your digital marketing content, it needs to be as unique as your store is unique to your brick and mortar stores. I think that's the biggest message I would give to the listeners today.
Love it. I couldn't agree more. There's so many opportunities to really create that brand and that messaging and tell those stories and let people into that brand. Such good advice. All right, Paul, you ready for the resilience round?
No. Go ahead, though.
All right, we're doing it anyways. Okay, so best business book. Do you have another suggestion? You want to stick with People Buy You?
I'm going to stick with People Buy You, although I have to say that I really like the book Brevity. It's a great book, and we're actually teaching our people in Management 1 about it because, and you would think after this interview that I should probably read the book again because I've been pretty brief about my answers. But it really is a good book to read about how communicating with people has changed since the iPhone. Yes. And since we have these smart devices now, you know, our attention span as human beings has gone to like a goldfish. Yep. And so we have to be super brief in whatever message we have to tell people, we have to do it quickly and not drag it out. So I like that. But People Buy Now, I think, is really, really good.
Okay, awesome. We'll link to those. Best retail technology, like an app or software?
Well, I think, you know, I just got the glasses from Warby Parker, and my daughter just bought her some glasses from Warby Parker also. And if anybody bought glasses from Warby Parker. They know about that. They know about the digitalized eyewear app that you have that you can put on your phone. And you can literally shop. You can put the glasses on when you don't have to be in the store. You can literally put them on and you can see what the glasses look like right from your iPad or your laptop or your phone. And when you, and you can also fit them also before you get them, and you can see when they're going to be delivered. So I really like the Warby Parker app, I think is really good.
That's really cool.
In terms of companies that work with Management One, we have a wonderful company out of Denmark that's a very close partner that I know, Crystal, you know, she may have even, but you may have interviewed Ula already. But the Vaves Pro app is a great, great app for retailers, for independent retailers, in terms of keeping track of their orders, keeping track of their on orders, being able to take picture, have pictures of them so they avoid duplication and buying. It's a terrific, very affordable app. So,
and say the app name again.
F-A-V-E-S, Faves.
Okay, Faves.
Yeah, you can find it right on, it's on the Apple Store.
Okay, very cool. How do you keep up with the ever-changing retail landscape?
I read Retail Dive every day. You know, it's kind of like, it's like the retail newspaper online. And it's really keeps me abreast of what's, you know, what retailers are in trouble, you know, who's creating this, what's happening there. So I really like Retail Dive. I think for independent retailers, shop. Go shop other retailers. Go shop your competition. Get into other stores. If you go to a trade show in Dallas, don't be there for 2 days to shop. Spend an extra day and go visit stores in the area, or New York or Los Angeles or Atlanta, wherever you go by, Chicago. So I think that's really important too. And then, of course, just always the most important habit that any independent retailer can have is to listen to their customer. Make sure you understand what they're asking for.
Mm-hmm. Great advice. To help retailers be stronger, more rooted in success, what's a financial foundational best practice?
Well, I think I've already said it, but cash flow and looking at your inventory as an investment. Your inventory is listed as an asset on your balance sheet, but it's really not an asset until you sell it. I had a client in Grand Rapids, Michigan years ago. His name was Danny Horowitz, and he had a great line. He said, "I love my on order and I hate my inventory." And I go, "How so?" And he goes, "Because my on order is a little bit like my blind date. We haven't gone out yet, so I'm really anticipating this fabulous date. My on order is like my second wife. I'm really sick of her. Or my second husband. You can go either way, right? My on hand is I'm impatient. I want it sold. Why haven't you sold it? Let's move it around. You know, I just wrote the invoice out for it. You know, it hasn't sold yet. And so I love the fact that he said, I love my on order and I hate my inventory. I think there's a lot of truth in that.
That's funny. That is good. Okay. If you had to start your career all over again, what's one thing you'd do differently?
There's lots of things I could say that I probably would, like I was social chairman of my fraternity in college for a year. That's like a record. And that was because I was a fun guy, you know. I think if maybe I studied a little bit more and wasn't social chairman of my fraternity for a year, maybe I might have been better off. I don't think, Crystal, though, in the big picture, I'm not so sure there was anything that I would do that would change fundamentally in my life. I've always been curious. I've always wanted to learn, and I've always wanted to help people. And I've always felt like I have a good EQ in terms of an emotional connection to people and how to be able, and I built this up over the years, to be able to, working with independent retailers. We work at Management One with independent retailers about a topic that can be highly complex to many people. Most people don't like math. Half of our clients don't even like looking at their financial statements, let alone talking about financial merchandising.
Yeah.
But it is our ability, and what I've tried to instill in everyone at Management One, is to use the KISS method. Let's distill this down into its most simple way so that our clients can understand how important this is to their success, to understand how to manage their inventory correctly. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the things I'm most proud of, actually.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. And what do you think the future of independent retail looks like?
Well, I think it's bright. I really do. I can't go from Birmingham, Michigan to Birmingham, Alabama. And if I walked into a mall, I would see essentially the same stores. It's so homogenous out there with the chains. They're the same inventory and it's the same old. Independent retail is growing. It has been growing. It continues to grow. And the future, I think, is very bright. I really do, for people who want to get into this business. And one, again, a rewarding thing for me and everybody at Manage One is to talk. You know, I had a meeting this morning with someone who just opened a store 2 months ago, and she was smart enough to know, and her dad owned, I think, 25 McDonald's franchises. And she came back to her hometown, and she wanted to, and she's opened the first store, and she's already signed a lease for a second store. And her dad told her, who's a successful businessman, he said, I want you to find a consulting company to guide you in terms of running the business from where you're weak. You're not, you don't need help in terms of fashion. You don't need help in terms of how the store looks. She gave us a tour today online of the store. It's gorgeous, absolutely beautiful store. Merchandise displayed perfectly. But he said, he told her, he goes, you need help on the financial side and your accountant is not going to give it to you. I think those, the future of independent retailer is, retail is bright for those people who know what they don't know. Mm-hmm. There's an old saying in business, I don't know what I don't know. And I think people who understand that and don't reject something just because they don't understand it right away, those are the people that are generally successful.
Well said, Paul. Listeners, you heard it today from somebody who has been through and in retail for a while, who has seen true economic downfalls and true points of worry that have had impact on us all. I'm hoping that we have some relief after listening to today. We have some clarity on where we need to focus our energy. And Paul, I just can't thank you enough for showing up, for sharing your wisdom and giving us some really great stories. Again, your email address will link to anywhere else you want people to connect with you, or is email the best place?
Email is absolutely the best place. And I will respond to every email that I get. So
awesome. Thank you so much, Paul, for being here. Yes. And everyone, remember that I'm rooting for your success. Have a great week ahead. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for being here. It means the world to me. Don't forget to join the Rise and Shine newsletter, which is social media news you need to know, sent via email every Monday morning. Go to crystalmediaco.com/rise to join. And don't miss the newest episode of Rooted in Retail, which drops every Sunday morning.